Just a note before we get into today's episode, we recorded our conversation on Thursday, April 4th. So that was before the House Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes announced that he would step down temporarily from leading the committee's probe of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign and charges of surveillance of the Trump campaign and its associates by the Obama administration. Okay, let's go.
Who is the current Speaker of the House?
Don't even know.
Will they rule in the president's favor or will they send it to the Supreme Court?
You can't refer to a senator directly by their name.
Congressional redistricting.
Separation of power.
Executive orders.
The National Security Council.
Civics 101.
I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Civics 101, the podcast refresher course on some basics that you may have forgotten or slept through in school. And here's what we're going to be talking about today.
The president has called for congressional investigations.
Catherine, bring us up to speed, the latest on the investigation.
Our select committee of the United States Senate is about to begin public hearings on something called Watergate.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans?
You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last.
We've received a number of questions about congressional investigations. How do they work? When is it Congress's job to investigate an issue? And who does the investigating? Linda Fowler is back with us. She's professor emeritus of government and policy studies at Dartmouth College and author of several books, most recently Watchdogs on the Hill. Professor Fowler, thanks so much for being willing to school us again.
Well, investigations have become a pretty hot topic.
Yeah, they certainly are. Anything in the Constitution mentioning or governing congressional investigations?
There's no specific language that says Congress has the power to investigate the executive branch, but so it's an implied power. But basically, since Congress is charged with making all the laws, it needs to inquire whether the executive branch is following the laws that it passed and whether it's doing those things properly.
So we know this is very timely right now, but when was the first congressional investigation?
Well, actually, it was in George Washington's presidency. There were troops engaged on the western border fighting various Indian tribes, and Congress had an inquiry about how that was going.
When are you? We've heard of some, you know, famous congressional investigations. Can you run us through some of the real benchmarks in the past?
Well, a really famous one was on war profiteering during World War II that was led by then Senator Harry Truman. Of course, the Watergate investigations in the 1970s by Sam Ervin, a Southern Democrat from North Carolina who chaired the Judiciary Committee. We've also had recent investigation about conditions at Walter Reed Hospital. In addition to Watergate, many people may remember the McCarthy investigations of domestic communism.
What is the difference, Linda, between a probe and an investigation? We're hearing a lot about Congress or agencies are probing what's going on now or what did go on with the Trump campaign or administration and Russia.
Well, investigate is a little more loaded, isn't it? It implies there was wrongdoing. So a probe is, let's find out whether there's wrongdoing. But in terms of the mechanics, there's really not much of a difference, with the exception being that sometimes Congress creates special committees by statute that are charged with investigating something particular. So, for example, when Frank Church's committee investigated abuses of intelligence gathering and activities by the CIA in the 1970s, that was a specially authorized investigation.
And we're saying congressional investigation, so that's both chambers, the House and the Senate. Why are there separate investigations called by the House and the Senate?
Well, you have to go back to 1946, after World War II, when committees could launch investigations, but they had to get approval from their chamber to do it. After 1946, when Congress enacted a statute, it required all standing committees in the House and the Senate to engage in oversight and conduct inquiries. And gradually, these committees, such as the Armed Services Committee or the Judiciary Committee, were granted subpoena powers so they could compel witnesses to come before them to testify. So you can get investigations in one chamber, but not the other. Inquiries about the potential activity by Russians in our 2016 elections, it's unusual in that both chambers are running oversight hearings, but they are not official investigations with specially hired staff.
Okay. So you mentioned subpoenas. You know, when they talk about the language of congressional investigations, they're questioning witnesses, testifying. Are they the same legal procedures and protections as a trial?
Yes and no. So they have some quasi-legal features. For example, the subpoena, that if you ignore a subpoena from a congressional committee, you can be compelled to testify. You can be locked up for contempt of Congress if you don't. It used to be the case that during the McCarthy era, people who refused to testify were nevertheless threatened with being locked up for contempt of Congress. So after the mid-50s, there are more procedural protections for witnesses. They can't be compelled to testify against them. And so one odd thing that you have coming up right now is whether if a congressional committee grants immunity to a witness, whether that's binding on the Justice Department. And so if you look at what happened last week, where General Flynn asked for immunity in exchange for giving testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee looking at the Russian connection. If the Senate granted immunity, then any testimony that he gave could not be used against him in a criminal or civil prosecution.
So we've talked about probes, oversight, some of the things that can happen in a congressional investigation. But can you help me break down the types of investigation? I've seen things like standing committee, bipartisan select committee, independent, special prosecutor. Can you help discern what is what there?
All right. So all government agencies have their own internal oversight activities. Most of them have what are called inspectors general. And they report to the president, but they can also be called to testify before Congress on their findings. You also have standing committees, which are the regular committees that Congress uses to vet legislation, markup bills, and so forth.
So that's like the Senate Armed Services, the Judiciary Committee, Intelligence, that kind of thing.
The Senate Intelligence Committee, correct. Then you may have either the Senate or the House or jointly authorize an investigative committee. So, for example, the House Armed Services Committee and the Senate Armed Services Committee both launched inquiries after the consulate in Benghazi, Libya, was overrun by a mob and several Americans were killed. They had their inquiry, they had public testimony. Republicans in the House at the time were not satisfied. They were convinced that Secretary Clinton had been negligent. So the House then went ahead and authorized an investigation, and they set up a special committee with special staff. So the difference, I think, between an investigatory committee and an oversight committee has to do with whether the Senate it's using its existing organizations or whether it creates a new one with a very special purpose.
I know we're talking about the different types of investigations, but I'm just curious about members of these standing committees. Do they have any training as investigators? You know, why are they qualified to do these investigations?
Well, the whole point of the committee system in Congress is that members develop expertise in a particular policy area. So people on this intelligence committee are supposed to have had at least some experience in dealing with intelligence matters. People on armed services may have a special expertise on defense matters. But there's a lot of variation among chairs and among members. So Devin Nunes, for example, has been in the Congress, I think, since 2000. He's chair of the House Intelligence Committee, but he hasn't been on the committee very long, and he's only been chairman for a term. And his lack of experience is very much evident in the fact that he's gotten himself into difficulties in how he's handled intelligence inquiries and, of course, going around his committee to brief the White House a couple of weeks ago. Mm. So there's a wide range of expertise. Some chairs and committee members are very conscientious. They work hard on their committees. Others, not so much.
Hmm. Okay, how about an independent commission? There have been many calls for an independent commission to study this issue.
Okay, independent commissions are made up of people who are not necessarily serving in Congress, and they are appointed in various combinations by the executive branch or by the Congress or some combination of the two. So an independent commission has to be authorized by statute, which means it has to pass both chambers and it has to be signed by the president into law.
But if you're investigating the executive branch, does the executive still have sign-off on who's on this independent commission?
It depends on what Congress puts in the statute. But you can well imagine with Republicans controlling the House and the Senate that they might give the president more voice than if the Democrats were controlling the House and Senate when they drafted the law. There's a lot of horse trading that goes on in deciding how big the commission's going to be, who's going to be on it. So a classic example would be a different kind of independent commission was used to look at budget deficits. This one was created by Barack Obama, and he appointed some members of Congress to it, as well as former members of Congress and some experts. And they were charged with coming up for a plan for reducing the deficit. The Social Security Commission was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1983 to figure out how to put Social Security on a more stable situation. And that commission not only came up with recommendations, but they also produced helped produce draft legislation. So a lot of it depends on what the politics are. But for many people, including me, using the standing committees, the existing committees, like the Senate and House Intelligence Committees, make more sense because you don't have to go through the lengthy delays of passing legislation, getting buy-in for the different parties, and establishing what their jurisdictions are.
Yes, but we have clearly seen how partisan divisions and loyalties work within Congress. And there have been some doubts, you know, in op-eds, pundits, journalists have raised doubts about whether or not those kind of loyalties mm-hmm. might prohibit a more real, robust investigation in this case and in cases of the past.
That's exactly right. And so this is why you have a prominent Republican like John McCain calling for an independent commission, and as well as many Democrats. But you have to recognize there's a trade-off here. The trade-off has a lot to do with timeliness. If you have more time to go into depth with an issue, then the commission is the way to go, particularly if both parties agree, as they did with 9/11, that this was a matter of such grave import that you needed a special organization with special staff resources and so forth. But the 9/11 Commission didn't issue its report until years after the September 11th disaster. I think many people feel that with this election, its legitimacy, with the fact that there seems to be ongoing efforts by people connected with Russia to undermine the political process, not just here, but in various other countries like Ukraine, France, and so forth. I think a Senate or House committee could deliver a result in a shorter amount of time. But whether it would be credible or not, it's hard to know right now. It may very well be that what the Senate and House committees will come up with is there's enough activity here to warrant a full commission. But at least right now, we don't know that.
Linda, does the American public have any way to weigh in on whether there is a congressional investigation calling their reps? Does that matter?
Of course it does. There are a couple of things that the public needs to convey. The first thing is that they think these allegations are serious and need to be taken seriously by both parties. Their job is not to rush to judgment and say, you know, the Trump people are guilty or they're not guilty. But what the public does have a responsibility to do is to insist that this be handled in a judicious manner, and that Republican views and Democratic views are weighed carefully.
Linda Fowler, you are just a font. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure as always, Virginia. Bye-bye.
All right, closing the book. Today's episode was produced by me and edited by Taylor Quimby. Music from Broke for Free. If you're looking to deepen your understanding of civics, you can sign up for our weekly extra credit newsletter. Besides being a fast track to becoming a teacher's pet, you will get reading lists to conduct your own investigation on the topics we've covered. You can take pop quizzes to see how much you've retained and get tips on how to remain an active and engaged citizen. All delivered in what I promise is a visually stimulating package. You can sign up for extra credit at civics101podcast.org. Also want to let you know that on a week when everybody's actually talking about the filibuster, that there is a Civics 101 episode on the rules and procedures and the nuclear option of the filibuster. You can find it in our archives at civics101podcast.org. I'm Virginia Prescott. Civics 101 is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.